The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
All right, that's the Dead Daisies for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuned into Memphis Metal Mondays with me, Dirty D, right here at radio-memphis.com. Song and a prayer, because sometimes that's just what you need on a Monday night. And also, it's what you need when you're in this business. And, you know, I've been talking to you guys, you know, for the past few minutes about some cool things that are coming down the pike for Radio Memphis, you know, especially for Memphis Metal Mondays and Radio Memphis around the world. And ultimately, what's actually happened is that, you know, I've been able to get with an individual by the name of Ken Barr. We are the Road Crew. He's the author of that book. He's also the owner of Ken Barr Films. He's an independent filmmaker, award-winning author as well, and definitely somebody you want to catch up with. And, you know, we were able to kind of come up with the idea that we needed to spend some more time with those people that do the things behind the scenes. You know, things that, you know, maybe that incredible record that you love so much was recorded so well, and maybe that awesome live show that you just saw, you know, had such fantastic things going on and you were so enthralled with it. Or maybe it was just simply a fantastic event that you might have attended. And of course, you know, we're going to have a lot of more cool things that are coming up our sleeves. And ultimately, what we're actually talking about right now is you're going to see a lot of things that talk about at really cool stuff called Radio Crew Radio Series. And what the Radio Crew Radio Series is ultimately us taking this opportunity through Radio Memphis and sitting down and maybe doing some interviews and sitting down and actually you know, putting together a couple of roundtables. And you never know, if you need to stay tuned, because we've even got more stuff planned. And I can't share like all my cards, because if I do that, well, you know, you guys will keep coming back. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, to kick a couple of things off, you know, and to really start this right, I was fortunately introduced to an individual that I was able to sit down with this past week and spend some time with on the phone. And, you know, and the more time I spent with him, you know, the more that I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. You know, I'm going to love being able to share this individual with all of you. And as it turns out, you know, I'm talking about none other than Rory Romano. Now, he is not only the house engineer and production manager for the Culture Room in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, he is also the owner of RMR Audio Productions and does custom logistics, and he's also a production assistant for 70,000 tons of metal. How about that? Rory's career actually began when he packed his ride with everything that he owned, including only having about a grand in his pocket, and he heads to New York, okay, from Atlanta, on a dream and a whim, all right, and he does this. And not only does he do this, he gets there, he hits the pavement, winds up landing jobs working in some of the biggest recording studios in Manhattan. You guys remember Soundtrack New York. You also remember The Power Station. As a recording and as a mix engineer, Rory's had the opportunity to work with artists like Meat Loaf, Aerosmith, AC/DC. He's even done some stuff with Dream Theater, Lisa Loeb, and this is just to name a few. He's got a huge, huge list. He's even done stints as a tour manager and went on the road with acts like Nightwish. He's done stuff with our boys, our homeboys here in Memphis, Saliva, Symphony X, Fintroll, Epica, Kill Hannah, Ice Earth, Camelot, Collective Soul. You know, it goes on and on. And the more that we can go on about this, you know, other than the fact that he's actually sat in the world, you know, in a recording studio, and his world is also in live sound, and the more and more we talk, the more I realize this is somebody that we need to talk to here in Radio Memphis, because we definitely know that we can learn something from him and learn something about some of his cool stories. So for those of you that are hanging out, I happen to have Rory Romano on the phone with me right now. How are you doing, brother?
Hey, Dirty D, how are you? Hello, Memphis Radio. It's a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, honey. I am so glad that we finally have the opportunity to do this right here on the show. How are you been, man?
Yeah, this is good, man. Glad to be a part of kicking this thing off for you guys. Ken Barr is a really good friend, and given the chance to help him out and you know, to help out your program, it's definitely a pleasure.
I really appreciate it. And I'm gonna tell you what, the funny thing about Ken is that as soon as we got on the phone and we realized that we were going to be lumped together to do an interview, we couldn't get off the phone beforehand. and it was funny, because the more we talked, you know, I learned about people like you, and you know, and of course I've got a couple of people that are coming down the pike that we're going to be talking about in the next couple of weeks. And you know, and ultimately it's you know, it's the whole family, you know,
yeah, of everybody. I mean, there's a million of us, and you know, there could be books for centuries for people to read, you know, the stories and the things that we've been through. So to be a small part of that world, it's you know, it's an honor.
Well, you know, it what's an honor for me right now is to be able to talk to you, because I know that there's you've got a ton of fans, you've got a ton of friends, you know, and a lot of people, you know, picked up the post and stuff today when they found out that you were going to be on air, and they got really, really, really excited. And so, and I'm thrilled about that. One of the things, you know, because you and I got to spend some time on the phone this past week, and you know, we got to know each other, and we got to have a nice little chit chat and get in each other's brain for a second. And I think, and I remember I told you I was going to kind of call you the carpet on a couple of things. One of my favorite things that you told me was that you were going to try to start out as a metal singer, and it didn't go well.
Yeah, everybody was, you know, teenagers, you know, well, kind of all started back in 1980, you know, growing up, you know, you listen to what your folks, you know, listen to. So I grew up listening, you know, to doo-wop and Johnny Mathis and the things of that, you know, because you don't have control of the radio when you're driving around in a car with your folks. And then somehow me and my buddies, we all had our own radio one day, and Back in Black came on the radio and pretty much changed my life forever in 1980. From that point on, it's just been nothing but rock and roll and heavy metal. And everybody started to pick up instruments, and you know, I didn't really have the patience to go through that. Figured, hey, let me take the easy route out. And lo and behold, what I thought was easy was actually one of the most difficult parts of being in a band. And first time I heard my voice back on tape, I decided to do the world a favor and go behind the console and be on the technical end of things.
Well, you know, and I love it how you're so honest about that. And I think that's great. Those of you who've tuned in, I'm talking to Rory Romano, Mr. Audio Engineer himself. And so you decide you're going to step away from you know, being a singer. And, you know, directly, why is it that you directly go behind the console? I mean, what made you go directly there?
Just a fascination of electronics. I was always taking things apart when they broke, just to kind of see, you know, hey, what's inside these things and what makes them work. You know, never was able to get anything to work again. Thankfully, you know, they were always broken. But it was just a fascination with electronics. And so some friends of mine who were playing in a kind of a, not really so much of a wedding band, but a band that played covers, you know, for different types of parties. And they had purchased a small little PV console one time,
right,
to bring to their shows, and they needed somebody to operate it. And so I kind of found a void and I filled it. And from that point on, my interest, you know, really started to peak. And then I just further took that, you know, to schooling in Atlanta and onward and upward to basically where I am today.
Absolutely. And well, and as I was telling everybody when I was bringing you into the interview, when you told me, you know, you ultimately kind of had a thing, you know, when you were in school and you were in Atlanta. It was like one moment you were going to do one thing, and you know, and it was going to be on one side, and then you realized halfway through it was like, okay, no, I can't do this. It's getting too crazy. And so you shifted gears.
Yeah, I started out electronic engineering school at DeVry University. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, not really focused on where that could take me, because I knew I wanted to do something in the entertainment industry. And if I had stuck with that schooling and got my degree and got the education, I would have been building consoles instead of operating them.
I see.
So after a while, I just kind of found, you know what, this is really, really not for me. I need to be on the more creative side of things with creating music.
Yeah.
So that's when I had switched over to the Art Institute of Atlanta and went through their associate's program. Graduated in the winter of 87. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Well, it's been quite a history for you, because after you graduate, you know, on a prayer and a dream, you roll straight up to New York. Now, what brings you to New York?
Just the entertainment itself. It's New York or L.A. And I just kind of pretty much, you know, chose the closest place where I, you know, I knew people. I had, you know, people to set me up, to help me out in the first, you know, for the first little bit of time while I'm up there till I can get my feet on the ground. I didn't have any people that I knew in California.
Right.
So it was pretty much more of a logistical kind of choice at that time. And, you know, at the end of the day, who the hell wouldn't want to be in New York? It's a great city.
I love it. I love it. In New York looks good on you, man. The way you just embrace it and the way you talk about it, too. And I can definitely tell that. So you get there. And it's funny because, you know, everybody looks at your discography of everything that you've done, you know, and everything that you've been able to work on as far as albums, all the tours that you've been on. And you know, because you not only did you work in the recording studios, I mean, you also, you know, went out on tour as tour manager. Sure. And, of course, you know, some other things, and you've worked with some pretty cool people, but see, everybody doesn't see everything that you had to do in order to get to that point, you know, and what you had to do.
Yeah, people think we live in a fantasy world. They think it's all glitz and glamour. They don't see the hard work and the long hours that go into making records and doing tours and setting up shows and, you know, loading in at 4 a.m. to go do a morning TV show, like, you know, in New York City. People don't see that stuff. Nowadays, I only wish we had the kind of social media, you know, when I first started out,
right,
so I could have documented a little bit more. But, you know, what you see people posting on social media right now, all the cool pictures of places around the world, you know, that's just a small amount of time out of somebody's day where they got to go and snap a few pictures.
Well, sure.
You know, and all of a sudden, they have this image in their mind that you're on vacation.
And
you're having a grand old time.
Of course.
You know,
of
they
course.
Don't realize that you just had to spend 6 hours on the side of the road, you know, because your engine overheated in the van.
No.
Or you blew a tire on the trailer, so your bus is stuck on the side of the road, you know, for 4 hours. You know, they don't see all that kind of stuff.
They don't see all of that. So when you get, so backtrack a little bit, and for those of you that are hanging out with us here on Radio Memphis, Memphis Metal Mondays, I'm talking to Rory Romano. You know, you get to New York, and you wind up, you know, what would you consider kind of your biggest break when you get there?
Well, biggest break, you know, I mean, which started it all off to me was actually getting a job in a studio. Getting into the field that I wanted to be in and being able to leave behind the so-called 9-to-5 world.
Sure.
I had to spend the first couple of years falling back on, you know, what I was gifted at, which was working in the, you know, screen printing industry, silk screening.
See?
And that helped me, you know, survive and earn a living while I was, you know, pounding the pavement and trying to, you know, get my foot in the door somewhere, somehow.
Right.
Once that happened, and I was able to leave the 9-to-5 world behind, I just had to really, really bust my ass to prove myself.
Of course.
And to make myself valuable to where I was needed. Everybody's replaceable, but you got to make your mark.
I'm glad you said that. And I'm glad because there's a lot of people that need to understand that. You know?
Oh, yes, there are.
I know.
It's the current state of affairs right now, but I'm sure we'll get to the current state of affairs.
I know. I feel you. I feel you oozing through my cans in my head going, he's ready just to go ahead and unleash the Kraken. But before we do that, I want them to understand what makes you so fantastic and so awesome and why, you know, you are able, you know, kind of to do what you do. Because, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you are doing what anybody else can do, you know, starting from the bottom and you know, and finding your way, you know, to the top and finding your way to you know, to these gigs and actually, you know, making marks and getting into these, you know, particular studios. So, you know, and from what I understand, especially with the stuff that you and I've been able to share and talk about, in the very beginning, a lot of your career is based, you know, pretty much based out of the recording studio. And you wind up actually landing and working in some pretty, you know, historic places, Soundtrack New York, and of course as well as eventually working into Power Station. When you first were able to step away from 9-to-5, where's the first place that where you're going into?
It was a small studio in Brooklyn, New York, kind of thinking like the Gravesend area, and it was a studio that opened up years ago called Fly Studios. It became Infinity Studios.
Okay.
And so I had landed a job there, spent about two and a half years, I think it was, in that studio. And one of the engineers that used to come around and you know, do some recording and tracking and mixing had hooked me up with an internship in Manhattan, which helped propel me from local you know, because there's only so far you can go working in a local studio that doesn't bring in international talent.
Sure.
Now, how this all ties in together, where I was able to meet you, is actually where I met Ken Barr for the first time, when he came in with doing rehearsals with Debbie Gibson, who was getting ready to go out on a tour.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Because that was his big met.
That was his big break, you know, that he will tell everybody, is that when he was able to actually go on tour and do
his thing. Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she used the Long Island crew out there, that, you know, where she was from. So she kept it real, she kept it local.
That is fantastic. So you show up, and you actually are in the studio, and you're also working on that project.
Correct. Yeah, I was, you know, helping kind of run the rehearsal room for them.
Okay. All right. So you wind up, you know, and of course, through that, you wind up, you know, working your way and through connections, you know, through networking and stuff, because, you know, you've got a lot of relationships. You've got a lot of things that are kind of working somewhat in the background, you know, and, you know, your next move is?
Next move, I get the internship through this engineer at Soundtrack Studios. I gotta say, that was probably 9 months of the longest time of my life. It was dealing with a lot of genre of music that I really, really wasn't into. It was a lot at that time. It was the hardcore gangsta, I don't even call it gangster rap or whatever, bands like Onyx and, you know, whatever they call that genre at that time. Just the way that they treated people and the way that the fights would happen in the studios amongst artists, and just, it's like a war zone at times.
That's
crazy.
And so
it kind of, you know, had me second guessing, like, what am I going to do here? You know, is this place for me? You know, is this what's going to help me propel my career?
I got you.
And through a tip and a mutual acquaintance of an engineer that I work with, I was told about the Power Station Studios.
Okay.
And at that time is when I really, really dug in, took advantage of a tip that they were looking for people, and really presented myself and pounded them until, you know, they opened up the door for me.
Wow.
And it was through a mutual friend who respected the work that I did as an assistant engineer, who placed a very timely phone call to the manager as I was in the elevator on my way up for an interview.
Oh my goodness, that's so crazy.
And sure, you know, lo and behold, I mean, they were straight up with me. They told me, you know, when I walked in, it was down to two people, and the endorsement of this engineer is what landed me the internship at this new studio.
Same.
You know, again, it's you know, none of it was ever easy. Working in Brooklyn, I was making a good living, I was doing okay, but the advancement was stalling. So I go into New York, I take that first, all of a sudden, I'm at an intern level of pay.
I got you.
So everything kind of, you know, you got to sometimes take two steps back to take a step forward. And that's sure enough, you know, what I did. And then once I left that place, you know, same thing. I had to, you know, had to grind it out and do the best that I can to prove myself to get to a point where I am now offered a livable living.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so it wasn't an overnight thing. It took many, many years. Took, you know, to over 4 years to really get to where I felt my career will take off. And then about a year and a half or so, maybe 2 years into working at the Power Station, you know, the ultimate dream came true, which was getting to make a record with the band that basically introduced me to the world of rock and roll, and that was AC/DC on the Ball Breaker record.
That right there is just, I mean, and I listen to this, and it sounds really common, you know, as far as in the music world and music business. Yeah. And you know what's funny, Rory, is that you're talking about that this was, you know, this is the band that, you know, you listen to that introduced you to rock and roll. And here you are, you're getting ready to work on their album. What's the first thing that's going through your head when you realize it's them?
It's surreal. I wasn't sure that it was, you know, the reality of it, you know, until the day arrived when the semi showed up and they started loading in equipment and you start reading the name on the road cases. You know, and the first few people that walked in, it was Brian and Cliff were the first couple that walked in. Really wasn't, you know, too crazy for me at that time. Phil Rudd had come in. This was when Phil rejoined the band after his about 11-year absence.
Okay.
It wasn't until Angus and Malcolm had come in, which I was out of the room at the time, And when I came back, they were already in the control room. And when I walked in, my knees buckled. I felt like I was literally going to drop to the floor because, you know, that was just, that was the pinnacle of the moment.
Oh, wow.
And that it was real, that this is actually happening.
Wow.
You know, and I got to, you know, shake hands with, you know, Angus and with Malcolm. And, you know, my dream was just to meet them one day, let alone make a record with them. And, you know, have my name live on their album for, you know, forever.
And
so
it does.
It's a pretty true honor. And,
So you're getting all those kind of
guys work hard out there because, you know, dreams do come true. And sometimes for some people, when they get to meet their idols, it's actually the worst experience of their lives. Because the people turn out to not be who they thought they were.
Right.
And for these guys, it was just the complete opposite. Just some of the best people, the funniest, you know, group of people you could ever be around, just having a great time and playing great rock and roll music. And to watch them jam every day for 2 months doesn't get any better than that.
It doesn't. So they come through. And of course, you know, again, as I was, you know, telling everybody before you had gotten on, you know, live with me here, you know, you've been on several, there's a big long list, you know. I did as you suggested and like printed your list up, and I know that's probably not everything, and I was like, well, damn, you know. But you've been able to, you know, work with people like, you know, like Meatloaf, and you've been able to work with, you know, you know, like Lisa Loeb. You've done stuff, you even did some stuff with Dream Theater, and you know, your touches, you know, are vast. I mean, yes, you sit in the world of rock and a little bit of metal and progressive, and you do kind of bounce once or twice out, you know, to maybe a little blues outfit, you know, or something like that. I said, but you know, looking at some of these people that are coming through, how is it that, you know, how is it that your career is at this point? You know, is this something that's the norm? You know, they're just walking in and you're just the one that's there to, you know, or being the assistant engineer or being the one that's mixing, you're just available. How is this working out for you?
Yeah, so just so that the listeners, you know, do have kind of a clarification, you know, I was a staff, you know, assistant engineer at a studio, so when clients would come in, you would get assigned to a session. More often than not, engineers would request an assistant that they work with. So there's different routes on how it used to work. At that point in time, I was kind of near the top of the food chain when it comes to the assistant engineers. So, which is why, you know, I got kind of, you know, handed some of the top, you know, clients and sessions that were coming in because of, you know, basically, you know, seniority.
Gotcha.
Top of that, you know, my studio manager, knowing what a big fan I was, you know, of the band, that helped secure, you know, the AC/DC gig. But I didn't get them all. You can't do them all.
Of course.
You know, timing and, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of albums that came through I would have loved to be a part of, but it just wasn't feasible to do that.
So you do the sound engineering. You're in the studios, you know, for quite some time, and you know, and of course, not only do you and I get to talk, and what people learn about me is that I also stalk, so I have to go dig information and got to find out about you and, you know, all the people you got to talk to and hang out with and interview with and stuff. So you do a couple of stints as a tour manager. Now, how is it that you're able to get out of the studio and jump and do these things?
Well, it started off, it was a gradual transition. It's kind of twofold on how that all took place. And as we were talking last week, I told you a little bit about, you know, the industry changing. And when I started in the recording business, there was no such thing as Pro Tools. There was no such thing as digital recording or anything. There was digital programming, but there wasn't digital recording.
I got you.
So, you know, I come from the old school, you know, 2-inch tape, editing takes together to make one master take and doing overdubs, you know, straight to tape and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So after, you know, being in that industry, you know, for, it was somewhere around 99 when the industry really started to take off and turn over, where people were, you know, starting to get into Pro Tools. It was just not a direction that I was a fan of. And to some people, it would sound very, very strange that you would pursue a career, spend so many years honing a craft, honing a skill, and then kind of just, you know, almost just walk away from it, which is almost, you know, kind of what I did.
Sure.
But I found a new passion in life. You know, I found a passion of traveling and doing music, which combined two of my biggest passions.
Of course.
So, you know, I did a few little runs here and there with some local bands. I even did a little bit of traveling with John McEnroe, the tennis player, yes, who, you know, had a cover band of sorts, had a few original songs, and, you know, he would go around and do shows. And, you know, one in particular was going to Paris for 2 weeks to play shows with him while he was commentating for the French Open.
I gotcha.
So kind of a little taste of that, you know, kind of really opened up my eyes a little bit that this could be a cool direction to go in. And it was around the year 2000, friends of mine had wrote a number one song. It was number one on the Billboard charts.
Okay.
And they invited me to go out on the road with them. And from that point on, it was history. I got a little leave of absence from the studio when that tour was done. Basically came back to them and said, these guys are going to keep me. Looks like we're going to be busy for the next couple of years. This is kind of going to be my official resignation. Thank you for, you know, for the time, the experience. I've met I got to learn from some amazing people who are responsible for, you know, who I am and what I am today.
I got you.
Getting to learn ethics and just how to do things and how to behave in this business and whatnot, which is some, you know, lacking today.
It is, and that was the biggest.
A lot of these people up and coming.
That was a big thing for, you know, when you and I were speaking, because of the opportunity for this platform, you know, for Radio yeah. Memphis and Memphis Metal Mondays and Radio Memphis around the world, and ultimately what we'd like to see happen through the Road Crew radio series. And you were so funny when we were talking about it, because you were like, we've got to tell these kids what they've got to do and what they don't need to do, and yes, you know, and ultimately it's you know, they haven't gone through the trials and tribulations, you know, that everybody that you've done and where you've been and what you've had to, you know, go through.
You know? People like myself and Ken, I mean, we really had to start out, from the ground. And nowadays, not to say that, you know, they're not starting from the ground, but it's a lot easier to go out on tour nowadays. I just went and spent the day at Warped Tour. Got a bunch of friends who were on that tour, on the production side of things. And, you know, got to go and hang out for a little while with that, and just to see what's running around. And, you know, it's just unbelievable, you know. And the problem is that they're bringing their friends, and their friends are learning. Now, I don't have a problem with people learning, because that's where you're going to learn.
Sure.
You have to learn in the field. You can't learn this stuff from a book.
Absolutely.
Right? They can't teach this in a classroom, you know, on how to properly, you know, do a job on the road. So everybody's got to start somewhere. But what's happening is a lot of these kids that are starting out on the road are coming in with the attitude that they know everything.
Yep.
And that's where they need to take a step back and listen to the people that have been doing this for a while and take the criticisms, take the advice, and not just, you know, flick your nose up at them saying, listen, old man, I know what I'm doing, you know, mm-hmm. go enjoy your retirement kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I see it day in and day out at my club, you know, with these crews that come in. They don't know my history.
Right.
They don't know where I've been, what I've done.
Right.
And yet, the way that, you know, they come across sometimes, it's just want to kind of smack him in the smack him in the head a little bit.
No, not you.
I'm kept for a while.
Not
hey, we'll let you know when it's time to come back out and play in the sandbox.
One of the cool things about you, and speaking of the club, you are the house engineer and y'all and production manager for the Culture Room in Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
And so that's a huge deal, because there's a lot of big acts. It's a big event, you know, place. And so, you know, one of the other things also too for you is that, you know, the falling in love with the live side of the house, live sound versus recording.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's ultimately kind of where you've kind of slipped yourself, you know, kind of into. And so with that, I mean, this might be naive of me asking, and I'm just, you know, kind of curious, you know, how different are the worlds like that for you?
You know, every time I think about it, it kind of, I try to equate it to everything coming around full circle for me, right? Because you look at the studio world, the studio is a controlled environment.
Right.
Okay, you're dealing with the same variables certain variables on a daily basis. You have the same consoles, you have the same PA, you have the same mics, you have, you know, all this stuff is the same. The stage is the same. This is the same. And then you have the live aspect of it, where the artists that come through with their gear is the changing variable.
Okay.
So to me, it's kind of like a combination of both. I get to work in a fixed environment that I know really well, and I can help the touring artists understand our room a lot better, you know, and help them get a better sound, you know, for their artist that day, so that they know what, you know, what frequencies, you know, do they need to look out for when they reach you in the system, and where's the best place to, the best spot to place this type of, you know, microphone or instrument in our room. Where's it going to sound best? All that kind of stuff.
Well, sure.
So it's kind of, to me, a little bit of a combination of both.
There's a little bit for you on that. I can definitely see that.
The big sacrifice is the lack of traveling I get to do. And that's the one thing that truly miss the most is, you know, traveling around and touring the world and meeting people from different cultures all around the world.
Of course. You know, it's funny because, you know, some of the things I've read a couple of statements and you know, and a couple of reviews, you know, on you, and, you know, some of them have been, you know, for staff, you know, that may have worked under you. Some of them may have been, you know, just some band members, you know, artists and things like that. One of the things that was pretty much across the board is that you were just very meticulous, on point, on game, and was not messing around. There was a program.
I'd like to see where those quotes are.
That's me summing it up. And, you know, and it was, they all were great. I mean, they all were very heartfelt, but they were like, man, he's on point, he's on program.
It's a part of my personality, I guess. You know, always striving for perfection. I know nothing could be perfect, but it doesn't mean that you can't continue to, you know, strive for it.
Well, sure.
To, you know, to get the best that you can. You know, some people, I guess maybe it's, you know, it's a little bit overboard. I was literally actually accused of one band through my entire career on the road. One band accused me of being too professional for them.
Oh.
And I took that as a compliment.
Of course. Absolutely.
You know? You know, I'm sorry when you're traveling around and you're touring in a van and we got a long drive to do that, you know, we can't just sit around and, you know, and wait for you to close the deal, you know, at the end of the night. I'm sorry, you know.
It doesn't work that way.
Just get in the van and let's go, you know. But,
See, that's the funny thing. That's the funny thing about you, Rory, is that not only have you done this stuff in, as far as in the recording studio, all right? You've done this stuff in, you know, in a venue, all right? And working with, you know, as far as, you know, people working, you know, with you on, you know, on that side of the house. Also with, you know, bands and artists coming in. You've also been on the road with them too. You know, so you've been at all points, you know, in the beginning. A person could come and get started to record, you know, and go play out and go on the road. You know, you've been at all those major points and been able to see all sides of the fence and how this works. And you know, one of the things, you know, if you were to say what it was that was so much different, you know, about the, you know, as far as the older bands or maybe the pro bands and stuff versus the bands that are up and coming and stuff, what's the biggest thing for you that you want to put out there for them?
Just respect. Respect the crews that you come into contact with, you know, when you show up at venues. You know, understand that, you know, they're there to help you. Don't run in with guns blazing thinking that you know everything and, you know, it's your way or the highway kind of attitude. You know, work as a team.
Absolutely.
You know, because it's a long road. It's a long journey. There's a million bands out there. There's more music out there today than there ever was. So the competition is fierce to keep yourself relevant and keep yourself in the spotlight, because you don't want to piss off the people on the way up, because they're going to be the same people that you're going to pass on the way down.
I got you.
And they're not going to be as helpful and forgiving if you disrespect them and treat them as you're climbing.
That's
you want to climb and stay at the top, you know, just be respectful about it. You know, go out, play hard. Biggest thing is, you know, make sure you take care of yourself out on the road. It's really, really easy to get caught up in the party.
There's a big
thing.
And you
find yourself dragging ass, and then your performances would start lacking and everything else, and then it could be a domino effect.
See?
So, you know, just stay grounded. Don't ever forget where you came from, And like I said, the biggest thing is respect. Give the respect to others as if, you know, you want the respect given back to you.
Perfect. That's a very perfect answer. So back to how the wheel of life works and over the course of time, you wind up, you know, again, okay, so you go on tour and you've done, you know, you've done stints, you've done stuff with Nightwish, you've gone out with the Howard Boys here from Memphis, you've been out with Saliva, you know, Symphony X, you've done
Saliva. Love those boys. funnest house mixing I think I've ever done still to this day, man. Always a great time mixing that band. It's just, to me, it's one hit after another. And it just doesn't get any better than that.
I'm so glad to see that. Of course, that's Memphis speaking out. You know, you wind up, you know, doing these things, you know, as far as on the road, you come back. Now, let's talk about the full circle, and it's funny how, you know, it works. So Ken Barr comes back into your world again.
Yes, he does.
I
can't remember what year. It may have been third or fourth year of 70,000 Tons of Metal cruise. I've been involved since day one.
Oh, cool.
Since the very first cruise.
Awesome.
And, you know, we all walked into this not knowing anything, you know, anything. And some of the responsibility that I was given, there wasn't anybody I can go to and ask. Luckily for some of the stuff that I've done prior to that on a different cruise kind of gave me a little bit of an insight and gave me an avenue of somebody I can reach out to and kind of talk to. But you can't teach somebody how to deal with and work with customs agents on how to get 12 semis full of equipment onto a ship.
Nice.
Okay. Now, for
that's
those that complain
roll
about what you have to go through to fly, stop your bitching right now. Okay? I say, you try to get 12 semis worth of gear onto a ship. Okay? Then come back to me and tell me how much you want to bitch about what it takes to, you know, have your bag scanned at an airport.
Well, I figured it would be. Well, see, I would. Okay. I'm gonna be a really guilty person. I personally would have thought it's a hell of a lot easier to get something on a boat versus something get on a plane.
Absolutely not. You're talking about, I don't know, 800 different items, okay, that are going on to a ship.
Yeah.
Which each item has a serial number on it.
Okay.
Okay. Now customs wants to bust your chops. They're gonna come over to you and they're gonna ask to see different pieces of equipment. Okay. You have to have a manifest. Okay, and you have to cross-reference that manifest, okay, and they're going to check it off. And then when you come back, you have to show them that same piece of gear because to them it's all about, because you're going to a foreign country.
Of course.
You know, with a cruise. So to them it's all about, you know, making sure that we're not going and selling equipment in a foreign country. To me it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But
well, I guess it does.
It is the way that it is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. They don't want you to do any black market stuff.
They can shut you down. And having the pressure of being the guy on the dock dealing with customs and trying to get 12 trucks of equipment loaded onto a ship, and if I don't do my job, that these 3,000 people that flew from 60 countries around the world don't get to see the bands that they flew for and spend thousands and thousands of dollars on. That's a lot of pressure.
See, I like the way you put that all into one simple statement. So technically, all the little snippets I've read about you and the statements about you being on point and run a program, they're true.
Yeah.
That's all you had to say.
You know, like I said, I, you know, through the help and advice, you know, from some people, and just, you know, just asking a lot of questions, you know, that's what a lot of these, you know, kids can do. Just ask questions. There's something you don't know. Don't pretend that you know it, or, you know, don't shrug it off. Ask a question.
You know,
remember that brings me back to this one thing a teacher told me in school one time. The dumbest question asked is the one not asked.
There it is. And you're right.
And it's stuck with me, you know, my entire life. And I've never been, you know, I've been in this business almost 30 years. I don't know everything. I'll never know everything. And I'll always be the first to admit if I don't know something, I won't be ashamed to admit it.
Same.
Because I have nothing to lose.
That's the way you're supposed to be. That's exactly where you're supposed to be. One of the cool things I will say about the stuff that you also do, and for those of you who are tuned in talking to Rory Romano, not only do you do all the crazy cool things you just mentioned about, you know, about the stuff on the cruise, you are also, on top of everything else, if you didn't already have enough, you are also in charge of the volunteers, you know, that work, you know, that actually work, you know, help work the sets and the cruises and things like that in production with you guys.
Yes. So add that in the beginning, of course, you know, I had to double up. So I did the custom stuff. We didn't have the volunteer thing going on in the first couple of years. It was something new, and we learned the hard way that we need more people to help us, you know, construct, build these stages and run these stages.
Right.
Because 70,000 tons of metal is bigger than anything that you'll ever see on the open seas.
Wow.
Okay. And we were talking about 60 bands it's up to now. 60 bands on four stages.
Wow.
So basically, we have stages that are going from 10 in the morning until 5 in the morning.
Wow.
You need crew. You need people that are able to help run those. Okay? Now, you can't bring on a salaried or a staff that's being paid to handle all that. It's a very expensive outfit.
Of course.
So, you know, what they've come up with an idea of bringing on volunteers to learn.
Okay.
And to expand their experience
in
a unique environment. You know, some of the aspects of it is the same, building stages, doing set changes, being a stagehand. None of that, you know, changes from land to sea.
Right.
But the logistics of helping get the stuff on and off a ship and the expedient time that it needs to be done.
Right.
That's the X factor that people will gain valuable experience that you can't gain anywhere else and could, you know, help people. We've had people move on to do some amazing things so far.
Wow.
I got one hospitality volunteer who is now working with Foreigner as, you know, assistant tour manager.
That's such a shame.
Probably, you know. And I got people that are guitar techs and, you know, for crews and touring around the world right now.
Wow.
So it's a great thing to see people are getting out of it what they put into it.
So what's it take to be a volunteer? Because, you know, I'm like looking at the site going,
It's a different thing. There's an email address that people are directed to contact. And usually that starts up a little bit later in the year.
Okay.
Usually sometime around September, October.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what we'll do is, you know, they'll make Facebook postings calling, you know, saying that volunteers are needed.
Okay.
You know, and of course, as with anything, there is a lot of negativity brought on by a lot of people.
I
know. Who think that, you know, it's slave labor and, you know, it's this and that.
Right.
You know, you can't listen to all of that. You know, these are people that just don't understand how the world works.
There's a business.
Any land festival that you go to, there's always going to be volunteers helping out.
Of course.
You know, so...
Of course.
You know, kind of listen to them. But I think going back to when we initially started talking about that, coming full circle, it was somewhere around the fourth or fifth cruise that Ken Barr was brought on as a stage manager, and we had reconnected and completed that circle of when we first met back in, I think it was somewhere around 1990-91,
something like
92,
that.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, he was funny because when I was talking to him, I caught up with Ken yesterday, and, you know, because he was excited about you you coming on tonight, and he was talking about that time, you know, when you guys reconnected, and he kept saying, he goes, I kept looking at him going, man, I know you, I know who you are, and he was like, I kept looking at him, and finally he was like, dude, Rory, and he goes, you know, it's one of those coolest feelings when you know that you were able to reconnect, one, but also two, that you guys had a good relationship. So it was like, oh my God, hey brother, yes, thank you for being here, man. We can do this.
Absolutely. You know, and he's been with us ever since. So, you know, he's carved a nice little home, you know, with the 70K family, and you know, they're gearing up now for round 8, and they've announced, I believe, over 20 bands already, and it's just looking absolutely massive. And, you know, every year when you think, wow, how can they top the lineup that they did last year? And all of a sudden you look at the lineup starting this year and it's just like, holy shit.
That's okay. No, we're good. I'm just curious, like, if I send you an email, and you see D's name come across as a volunteer, is it automatically rejected?
If what? I'm sorry, Tegan.
I said, if you see an email come through from Diana at Pirate Radio Studios that's wanting to volunteer, will it get...
Absolutely not. Nobody is nobody is discredited. We do have certain requirements. You know, okay. We do ask that people do have a certain amount of experience.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't completely shut the door because, again, we do offer the ability for people to come on and learn.
Sure.
But at least have a basic knowledge so that you're not completely... just dumbfounded on what you think you're supposed to be doing.
Sure.
And once you get on board, because it's a lot of hard work. Don't get me wrong.
Of course it is.
People aren't getting paid, but they get, they get to network with 60 bands.
Exactly.
60 crews.
Exactly.
They get a free cruise. They get a free cabin. They get all the food they can eat.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the experience of working alongside top level professionals.
That's the
entire time.
That's
so
the
experience, the worth of it is is definitely worth a lot more than what a tangible dollar bill is going to be worth. Okay, and so there are people who are clawing at the fact that they can't wait to come back and volunteer again.
See,
and we've had people volunteering all 8 cruises already.
Oh, wow.
And have no problem whatsoever. This is like their vacation for them.
They love it.
They get to come. They love the music. They love being around it.
Love it.
Do we get the few people here and there that are just BSing their way on for a free cruise to hang around and be a fan and hook up with bands and this and that? Yes. But it's hard to screen all of that in advance. Especially when you're bringing on 80 to 100 volunteers.
Of course. You know, that is...
Is a logistical undertaking of... Just a massive, massive undertaking.
Right.
Because on top of that, I'm coordinating all the customs logistics.
And you've got all that stuff.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
It's many months of planning.
Along with everything else you've got going on, it's a lot of work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That on top of running a club.
See? Now, what about, cruises, running clubs, running customs, being a mentor to tons of volunteers, running crazy, running your own, own little production. What's your game? What's your plan? You've got to have one more thing in your pocket that you're trying to accomplish. What's in it for you?
I have no idea because you never know what tomorrow's going to bring you. I just take each day, every day, one day at a time. Many years ago, went through a period in life where, tried to be structured and how they try to teach you in school. Well, you have to have goals. You have to set 5-year goals and this amount of time you have to do this. And then, at this age you have to do this. I can't live life like that.
Yeah.
'Cause it doesn't work out that way. Life is just an ever-changing situation every day.
Okay.
And you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring.
Okay.
So I really don't know at this point. I don't know if I will ever leave this industry. There's some days where I'd like to.
Right.
But the thing is, I don't know what to.
Where would you go? Right.
And I think once I figured out what the rest of my life is going to be like, then maybe I could, figure it out at that point and dive into it like I have for the almost 30 years in this industry and give it my all in something completely new and completely different.
Well, that will be interesting to find out what that just might be then, sir. I'm curious.
I can't wait for that day
happen. Well, honey, look, I know that we've taken up a good bit of your time, and I know
it's been a pleasure.
We've got an hour difference and stuff. I want to thank you, Rory, so much, for taking some time with us here. And you and I have already talked. We already know that this is probably not going to be the end of it. And at some point, we're going to get to talk some more, and we've got some other cool things coming up.
And, I hope I didn't drive away too many of your listeners.
No,
I actually stuck around and enjoyed listening to us have a chat.
Oh, are you kidding? I've got several, and in fact, I've got one I've got one that it was actually trying to send a question, you know, about an engineering thing.
Okay.
And so what I may do is find out what that question is and then shoot it over to you, and see if you want to answer that. And so you've got several young engineers, recording engineers that are getting started that are actually completely enthralled that you're on air with me right now. And so they've been hanging on every word, going, maybe he'll give us a secret. Maybe he'll tell us like what plug he uses.
Unfortunately, I'm a guy that I shoot straight from the hip. I don't beat around the bush. And the young kids coming up today, unfortunately, on a technical side of things, I probably don't have any advice for you because I know nothing about the digital recording world. but outside of that, if there's any other type of questions, I may be able to help you when it comes to technique, mic placements or, different variables like that. Sure, shoot them on, but don't ask me about plugins for Pro Tools because I know nothing.
No, you're so honest. But see, honey, what you do know is the stuff that's never changed. Okay. Yeah. And that's the other thing that I tried. And that's been like my cross that I love to carry with everybody is that, everybody's so into like new and shiny and this is the I want you to understand where this came from, because there's aspects of every part of this business, no matter what part you stand in, that doesn't change. Yeah, the platforms change, okay? The knob may change colors and, whatever. All right, it's a new program. Right. But the idea and what you do does not change.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I'm fortunate enough I get to work on, Midas digital consoles every day that I'm at my venue. So, I couldn't have asked for anything better with just top of the line equipment.
Of course it is. I know what it is.
It took a little work to get my boss to make the upgrade. But when he took me on board, he really took a lot of my advice and listened to me about certain things so that we can continue to move this venue, which is by one of the longest stand running concert venues in South Florida.
Love it.
And it's been there about 20 years now. And it's a great little spot. So if any of you listeners are ever down this way in Fort Lauderdale, come by the Culture Room if we have a show. And, just hit me up. And we'll bring you in and we'll take care of you guys. It's a great, fun little place.
Good.
Small venue, 650 capacity. We bring in some great shows.
Yeah, you do. You guys look like you party and have a fun time too, so it looks good. Well, listen.
Absolutely.
You have a fantastic night. You and I will catch up again here soon, okay, sweetie?
Thank you so much, Dirty D.
Absolutely.
And Radio Memphis, you guys all have a great night, and I hope to be back in your great city again sometime soon.
All right. We'll talk soon, honey.
All right. Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.